Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll talk now about the dramatic events in Syria over the weekend. John McCain sneaking in and Hezbollah going officially all in with Assad, and about President Obama's historic national security speech on Thursday, in which he actually called for an end to the war on terror. Our systematic efforts to dismantle terrorism. Well, we'll hear the rest of that clip in a minute. Jeffrey Goldberg, Atlantic Magazine and Bloomberg View columnist, former Middle East correspondent for The New Yorker, with us for this. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll get to Syria in a minute. But, you know, I was out on Friday, and I'm so bursting to talk about the Obama speech. Was this Barack Obama who was given a Nobel Peace Prize in anticipation of how he would change America's relationship to war actually doing it?
Well, one of the interesting things about the reaction to this speech is how unmoved many people on the left were by it, for good reason. I mean, this was not the true Obama busting all the way to the left and saying that we don't have a problem with terrorism. It was, however, in many ways, a repudiation of Bush-era policies and even more important, in a way, Bush-era rhetoric about the eternal nature of terrorism. So, yeah, I mean, this was second-term Obama having done a lot of thinking about the flaws in the systems that he inherited and some of the systems that he himself built, and kind of calibrating that a little bit.
Well, he certainly couldn't deny that we have a terrorism problem because we still have a terrorism problem. But
there are people who would say that, you know, the best way to deal with it is to sort of revert to a pre-9/11 mentality. And I guess what I'm saying is that this speech was not reflective of a pre-9/11 mentality.
But here's one of the dramatic ways that he did put the change he's going to try to implement.
Our systematic effort to dismantle terrorist organizations must continue. But this war, like all wars, must end. That's what history advises. That's what our democracy demands.
And here's another clip that also reflects his big think philosophy.
Unless we discipline our thinking, our definitions, our actions, we may be drawn into more wars we don't need to fight, or continue to grant presidents unbound powers more suited for traditional armed conflicts between nation states.
So, Jeffrey Goldberg, it was really that first clip that brought me up short. All wars must end. Is he declaring victory in the war on terrorism? He certainly wouldn't say he's surrendering. What would he say that he's actually doing if he says he's bringing the war on terror to an end?
Look, he knows that he's not bringing the war on terror to an end, and more importantly, he knows that he's not bringing terror's war on America to an end. I mean, there's an interesting rhetorical thing that he does on Afghanistan, if you recall. He always says, the war in Afghanistan is ending next year. You know, and what he means by that is America's role in that war is ending. The war is not itself ending, right, and we might be drawn back 5 or 10 years from now. But what he's doing, I think, is trying to help the American people reshape their expectations and recalibrate their understanding of, you know, I hate the expression, but the new normal. In other words, he's saying we're not in this titanic battle between good and evil anymore. We're going to fight enemies who try to kill us, but we're not going to let our inflamed rhetoric lead us toward inflamed policies or policies that we don't really want to enact. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think this is somewhere between a continuation of what he's been doing before and revolutionary change. So far, the revolutionary change is really in the rhetoric.
So, listeners, did you pay attention to this speech or the coverage of this speech? You want to react? 212-433-WNYC, or the other thing that we're going to get to is the developments in Syria. You can call on that, too, with Jeffrey Goldberg, Bloomberg View columnist and Atlanta correspondent, 212-433-9692. John McCain sneaking into Syria over the weekend to continue to make the case for arming the rebels. Hezbollah, oh, were they grassroots? Were they populist? Now they're officially supporting Assad. 212-433-9692. One more clip from the Obama national security speech.
I intend to engage Congress about the existing authorization to use military force, or AUMF, to determine how we can continue to fight terrorism without keeping America on a perpetual wartime footing.
So when he talks about engaging Congress on the authorization to use force, that's the thing that they passed right after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so expansive that President Bush and then President Obama used it to expand presidential powers vis-a-vis other branches of government. Is he actually saying that he is going to voluntarily give up some presidential power?
It seems, and, you know, I'm taking the non-cynical view here. The cynical view is that no president voluntarily gives up any power that's been accrued. The non-cynical view is that he understands that his time as president is moving toward an end. It's not for another 3.5 years, but he wants to establish and place new rules and new guidelines, worried about who might be following him. And he also, and this is, again, this is where, you know, he's looking for, a recalibrated or reformed AUMF, but he also believes, and this is my impression from talking to people in the White House, he also believes that you can't, it's not a one-size-fits-all sort of authorization. There might be reasons, other terrorist groups, other terrorist threats in the future that are not al-Qaeda, and you don't want to shoehorn in a different kind of war against a different kind of group into the same AUMF, and so that's what's going on there. But I think it's partially, and I'm willing to be non-cynical about it. I think it's partially, he is cognizant in a way that maybe some previous presidents haven't been, that unlimited executive power authority has its downsides.
All right. You want to talk to an all-out cynic about this speech? Alex in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Brian. From my point of view, it's just a speech, and I'm not 100% sure why people are getting so excited about it. It's just rhetoric. It's just words that he's said, that he's actually said similar things before. There's nobody being released from Guantanamo Bay. There's nobody going to be, that will be prosecuted or even investigated for killing U.S. citizens with missiles. So why should we be so excited about this new speech unless it's followed up by actions? When the actions come, then maybe I'll say that there's a change. But until then, I'm going to completely reserve any and all of my judgment. He's just doing the same thing, saying it a different way.
Alex, thank you. And what about those actions, Jeffrey? Because it was suggested in this speech that there is going to be a new policy with respect to transferring people from Guantanamo and trying to close Guantanamo Bay, and also to scale back the use of drone strikes. How about that one? Is it clear to you how he's going to scale back the use of drone strikes, or is it just a general principle?
One of the issues here, and I understand exactly where your listener is coming from, one of the issues here is that he's fighting, in fact, two different wars at once. There's the war against global al-Qaeda, which you see manifest itself in Yemen and Somalia and various places. Then there's the actual war that is still going on and will still be going on in Afghanistan for another year and a half or so. And in Afghanistan and in the area surrounding Afghanistan, Pakistan, where a lot of these people are based, he's waging actual war. A drone, in his mind, in Afghanistan is the equivalent of an artillery piece or a missile strike. It's just another weapon used to protect American forces and to fight the enemy. I think once we get out of Afghanistan, you'll see a more wholesale change in the approach. The signature strike issue, the attacking people who are standing around with guns in an al-Qaeda camp but aren't doing anything, that sort of thing, I think you're going to see change gradually. But again, your caller is right, especially on Guantanamo Bay. You know, no one's leaving. It's not closing yet. I would say in the president's defense, you know, he has tried in the past to get Republicans to agree to close it and to transfer a lot of these guys to American supermax prisons, and they've resisted. Democrats have resisted too. So, I mean, it's not, he doesn't have the authority or doesn't want to assert that kind of authority when there's so much domestic political opposition to this.
Jeffrey Goldberg, Bloomberg View columnist, Atlantic staff writer, former Middle East correspondent for The New Yorker. By the way, folks, a quick update on the first ever WNYC road rally from the Lower East Side to here at the station on the Lower West Side. If you heard us set this up before, let's see. Our producer, Jody Avergan, who's coming by cab, as Kate Hines from Transportation Nation comes by subway and Jim O'Grady from Transportation Nation comes by bike share. Jody tweets, no cabs. and it's raining. What have you gotten me into, Brian Lehrer? And we've also tweeted a photo of Transportation Nation reporter Jim O'Grady already on a city bike and on his way toward the station, even in the rain. So be careful out there, and we'll see how this winds up. All right, let's go to Bud in Manhattan, who's going to get us into the John McCain and Syria conversation. Bud, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling up.
Thank you very much. My question is that, Brian, you described John McCain as having snuck in to Syria over the weekend. My question is that really an accurate description? I can't help but think that McCain must have had some State Department clearance to do this. The report in the Times is that he entered Syria from southern Turkey. It doesn't say what type of vehicle. I don't know whether or not he was attending some forum in Jordan. I don't know if he took commercial air to Jordan mm-hmm. and was the State Department
right.
involved.
So what is snuck in? And it's true. It's a great question. The media in general is using the term snuck in. I'm looking at it on the CBS News website right now. But Jeffrey, what do we know here?
John McCain sneaks around anywhere. He's John McCain. I mean, it's kind
well,
of noticeable.
Certainly, you know, he snuck in by the standard of the Assad government, probably not giving him a visa,
sure.
right?
Sure. Sure. And the interesting question is, I don't know to what level, you know, the State Department was, State Department diplomatic security was involved, Capitol security. It's hard to imagine, and I'm trying to figure this out myself, it's hard to imagine that the executive branch wasn't knowledgeable about what he was doing and what he wanted to do. He didn't sneak in. He was driven across a checkpoint to meet with leaders of the Free Syrian Army, to meet leaders of the opposition over the border. Remember that
Who controlled that checkpoint? The Syrian government?
Oh, no, not the Syrian government. These are areas that are under the control of rebels. Right. The Syrian government's not going to let them go across to meet some rebels. In other words, he was going into a territory that had been, by their standards, liberated from the Assad.
So do you government. Give him credit for guts, even doing that as a 76-year-old guy, or do you write this off as a cheap publicity stunt?
Oh, no. I mean, look, John McCain, whatever you think of him, doesn't need any credit for guts. He's always proven he's had guts. This area where he was going is obviously not under active shelling. It's not under active combat. I don't think the opposition would want to put, the person who was actually their key advocate in Washington right. in harm's way. But sure, this was, there's nothing like going to see stuff for yourself, even though as a senator you get a quick and edited view, let's say, of what's going on the ground. So, sure, I think this is a good thing.
Why is he so confident that arming the rebels is in the U.S. national security interest? The reporting seems to be that the rebels are subject to al-Qaeda influence and are more about faction than democracy in Syria. So why is he sure expanding the war there is good for us? And I think good for us is his main concern, as opposed to humanitarian interest for the Syrian people. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you'd have to ask him that, but I think that he believes it's not too late to arm and strengthen the more secular-leaning groups within this very fractious and large coalition of opposition groups. And, he is dispositionally interventionist, as we know for years and years and years. And he believes that the price of non-intervention will ultimately be greater than the price of intervention. Again, it's a roll of the dice. And clearly, this is one of the most remarkable things. I've talked to him about this in the past. One of the most remarkable things is how there is no domestic, meaning American, domestic demand for increased involvement. I mean, he is... he's a pretty lonely voice on this, and he's aware of that. And I think doing things like this, going in there, is a way of drawing some attention to the fact that not everyone in this grouping, not everyone in this opposition, is in fact al-Qaeda affiliated.
Quick update from the Lower East Side. Jody has finally found a cab. in the East Broadway and Clinton area of the Lower East. It's not the easiest place to find a cab. I've been there, and he's on his way back. And by the way, in about 15 minutes, we'll talk to the Transportation Commissioner, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, about the launch of the Bike Share program. The Commissioner Sadiq Khan herself, as our three WNYC staffers finish their road rally and come back from the station via different means. So, Jeffrey Goldberg, just one quick word on Hezbollah officially saying that they are all in with the Assad regime. I mean, it's unbelievable. What started out as a paramilitary group to get Israel out of southern Lebanon is now officially siding with the Assad regime. What does that do to Hezbollah's claim to be some kind of populist grassroots Arab organization? And are they a proxy for Iran here?
By the way, I have to say before I answer your question, I just adore your show because you're covering both, you know, Hezbollah's role in the Syrian uprising and the status of taxi cabs on the Lower East Side at the same time.
It's who we are. It's what we do.
You're really covering the waterfront. It's great to listen to. On Hezbollah, I mean, look, this is not a surprise to anyone who knows anything about Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not an independent organization. It is the overseas or external proxy arm of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. It's controlled by Iran. Iran is all in on Syria. Iran wants to protect Assad from the rebels and want to keep him in power. Hezbollah is a useful proxy in that. So they have now sort of the mask has dropped, but nobody was fooled. I mean, Hezbollah people have been being killed in Syria by the opposition and fighting for months and months and months. And this is just another sign that what we're experiencing in some ways is a massive Shia-Sunni conflict. And, you know, if you were, I would say this, if you were a supporter, a Shia supporter of, or a Palestinian supporter of Hezbollah in Lebanon, and you've been told for 20 years, you and me and you were not fooled, but if you were fooled by this and fooled into thinking that Hezbollah was just a pro-Palestinian grassroots organization designed to let's say kill Jews rather than other Arabs, this would be coming as quite a shock. It's not coming to shock to people who pay attention to this in the region. But what you're seeing is this Hezbollah is being functionally used as a regiment or as a brigade of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps in support of its ally Bashar al-Assad.
Jeffrey Goldberg, Bloomberg View columnist, Atlantic writer, and author of the book, Prisoners, A Story of Friendship and Terror. That's yours, right?
That would be mine.
Prisoners, A Story of Friendship and Terror. What mode of transportation are you using to get home from work today, Jeffrey?
I'll be driving my 2005 Honda Odyssey minivan home from work today.
Plug alert, product placement from Jeffrey Goldberg.
Believe me, it's not. I'd rather have a Sienna, if you need to know.
We'll notify the manufacturer. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.